Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Milazzo. Cambridge 105 Radio.
It's kind of history as well. We're going to continue for the next little while because Sunday marks the 100th anniversary of the end of the Great War. And like many of his generation, my granddad, Charles Clover, was called up to serve his country. And as sort of a starting off point, really, as much as anything else, I asked local historian Roger Lilly to find out a little more. Roger is here now. Morning, Roger.
Hi.
Is it easy to find out information? Because I had the most scantest of details. My mother, who admittedly it was her father-in-law rather than her father, couldn't even remember his birthday. So I gave you, I think, what did I give you? I sort of got name, when he died, sort of, but not really very, very precisely. And then from that, I presume you track back.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, we knew his whole name and we knew when he died, so that managed to pinpoint him dying in Essex. On the military side, it's very much potluck. An awful lot of records were destroyed or damaged during the Second World War. So in this case, I managed to find two Charles William Clovers, one of whom was certainly serving with an Essex unit, another one was in the Royal Engineers. But I think it's almost certainly it's the Charles Clover who at one stage was a gunner with the Essex heavy artillery. He must have got through the war pretty much unscathed because there's no pension record for him. So that would have been very interesting because if soldiers were wounded, then often their complete medical records and service records have survived. But in his case, all we've got really are the little cards that were issued to show the award of service medals. But from that, we can be pretty certain that he ended up as a staff sergeant in the Royal Garrison Artillery. So he went from private to a fairly senior, non-commissioned officer status, and got through the war unscathed.
Yeah, he was five. I was five, I should say, when he passed away. And I don't recall any limp or anything like that. My mother tells me, because she met my father in the garden centre, the nursery, which he worked in for most of his life, and tells stories, and this would be from the 1960s, him regaling the office with some of his stories, and was very proud of the fact that he'd served.
Yeah, I mean, other soldiers weren't so lucky, and were traumatized mentally or physically. But it sounds as if he got through the war, unscathed.
I'm interested in that in itself almost, is because we know the vast numbers of soldiers who were seriously injured or who died, and we're going to be commemorating those and everyone since, of course, on Sunday across the country and in Cambridge at the at the War Memorial on Hills Road. Yeah. How lucky was he compared to everybody else?
I mean, the study I've done over the last 10 years focuses on the parish of St John the Evangelist, the suburb in the south of the city. And we know that about half the men, or about 20% of men ended up involved in the military. Of those, about half, that's about just over 100, were in what I would call the front line. They were in the infantry or the artillery. And of those, probably about half died or came back wounded. Others generally came back unscathed or they came back ill. I mean, there was a lot of illness. He was fortunate. If you're in the infantry artillery, the record is that you were lucky that about half of the people involved would have been killed or been wounded in some way or another.
And this 20%, it presumably narrows in on that age range of late teens, early 20s. Between what age ranges were those who were called up?
Well, I mean, initially we're talking about people who were actually in the regular army or were in the reserves. But once when they started appealing for volunteers, then the age range would widen. In fact, there were a remarkable number of boys under the age of 18 who tried to, and some of them did get into service.
They're just lying about their age.
Absolutely, and some of this was condoned, you know, and so you ended up with some very young men, old boys, you know, actually fighting. But once conscription was introduced, then the top age limit was 41, but then that was extended to 51 by end of 1916. And in fact, you know, we have people serving at the end of the war in their 50s, and I think there's someone in the parish who was age 57 or 58 serving with the Royal Army Medical Corps. So, you know, it encompassed people of a very wide range and by the end of the war.
Mm. Well, Roger, you're staying with us for a little while longer. We'll talk after 8:30, perhaps a little bit about your research in the city of Cambridge. And I know you told me that yesterday you were sort of doing some detective work in one of the colleges. Mm. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover and Lucy Milazzo. Cambridge 105 Radio.
And local historian Roger Lilly is still with us this morning. We're chatting about the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War. Roger, what was Cambridge like back then?
Well, obviously, the parts of the city were very old, but I mean, the parish of St John the Evangelist, where I've done most of my study, was actually relatively new. I mean, many people had only been living in the parish perhaps for 10 years or so. It's a bit like some of the areas of new construction nowadays.
Lucy, this is kind of like the equivalent of where you live
back
100 years ago, by the station now, with the same sort of thoughts and presumably the same concerns coming through.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there were places like Blinco Grove, you know, and Rock Road, which were only half built. You know, streets like Glebe Road had yet to appear, really. And it was where, you know, people who were moving into the city to work with the railway, to work on in the high tech of those days, which was telegraphy, where they were coming with their families. And often they were well enough off, perhaps, to have a servant or so living with them. But, you know, these are the families, just like, you know, many others, you know, who were directly affected by the First World War, either because, you know, their sons went off to, and joined the military, or because the wives and daughters became volunteer nurses working in the big military hospital, the First Eastern General, or in some of the VAD hospitals, or because, you know, young men from, you know, the colonies from Canada and Australia were passing through and were being billeted with them. And in many cases, we know from marriage and baptism records, you know, were marrying the daughters of the families that they were billeted with. So, you know, there was a lot of social change going on.
Mm. Mm, very much so, by the sounds of things. Were there particular areas of Cambridge that were affected more than others? I mean, really, in terms of perhaps, well, deaths, I suppose, really, as much as anything else.
Well, it's interesting.
Loss of life.
Yeah, I mean, looking at our parish, there was a particular concentration of fatalities, in Cowper Road, particularly during the course of a year 1916-1917.
And why particularly there?
Well, I think possibly that they were slightly more ordinary families. It's difficult to know. I mean, it's just bad luck, really. Where you get other roads like Hills Road, where you had, you know, much more prosperous families. But even so, even among those, you know, the young men who may have been, to the Perth School or to in university, they were the ones who were the junior officers. And the mortality rate among the second lieutenants, the first lieutenants, was higher than for any other rank, you know, because they were the people who were first over the parapet. Mm. You know, and we've got several cases in our parish of young men who, you know, had just finished at the Perth, were about to go off to university, and they, you know, they enthusiastically joined up, and within a couple of years they were dead.
Mm. And those who remained behind in Cambridge when people returned, because presumably if somebody was seriously injured, they were returned home, first of all to a hospital and then back home to their families. What sort of reception were they being greeted with?
I mean, this is difficult to know, and this is one of the projects I'm involved in at the moment with the charity Headway. We're trying to find out what happened to men when they came back with serious injuries, you know, which would have affected their capacity to work.
Now, Headway does a lot of work with people who've suffered brain traumas and,
yeah,
and strokes and things.
Yeah, and what we've been trying to find out, examples of people who came back with serious head injuries. The reality was that many of those died on the operating table or very soon afterwards. But you know, records are very few and far between. I mean, there were some who came back, you know, who wouldn't ever talk about their experiences. Some, in the case of your grandfather, who were very happy, and we've got plenty of cases of people who, you know, who came back and carried on and very successfully their businesses, but other people whose health was shattered. I mean, there was a chap who lived in Leeward Road who was professor of medicine, who. Was given the job as inspector of the military hospital laboratories. And when his obituary was written in about 1920, it was pointed out that he came back shattered. He was completely exhausted. And so even people in, you know, protected occupations, like, you know, perhaps working with the Royal Army Medical Corps, could still exhaust themselves.
Mm. Fascinating to learn all of this. Thank you very much indeed for coming in this morning, Roger. I remember your project. Are you sort of still looking for people to offer their memories and experiences which may have been passed down through families?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I'm doing is putting as much information as I can on the Capturing Cambridge website, and that includes photos. I was going around town yesterday trying to track down the location of a mystery photo I had, and after visiting five porters' lodges, managed to locate it in North Court Emmanuel College, which is a bit off the beaten track, but there it was, you know, the location of this photo.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much again. Yeah, come back sometime. Tell us some more. Yep. Very interesting.
Thank you very much.
It's 21 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Cambridge 105 Radio.